Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the SAF Holland Investor and Analyst Conference Call. At this time, all participants have been placed in a listen-only mode. The floor will be open for questions following the presentation. Let me now turn the floor over to your host, Mr. Stefan Haas.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Stefan Haas speaking, IR at SAF Holland. And first of all, thanks for joining on that very busy day. I hope the colleagues from HELLA have finished their call. We will start as follows. Mr. Borkert will run you through the highlights of the second quarter. He will also comment on market developments that should be pretty interesting for you guys. And we will then hand over to Dr. Heiden, who will run you through the financials. The session will be followed by a Q&A session, as you used to. So thanks for joining. We will start.
Yeah, thanks, Stefan. This is Detlef Borkert. Welcome and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm pleased to present the Q2 numbers 2017 together with my colleague Matthias Heiden. And due to the restricted time frame, I would like to jump right into the presentation and start with page number 2 with the agenda. There are 4 bullet points. I will start with a business summary of the second quarter this year, do a market update, followed by financials, which will be done by Matthias. And then I will do the last 2 slides with the market forecast and the outlook for the rest of the balance of this year. Yeah, with this, I would like to jump straight to page number 4 with a business summary for the second quarter this year. There are a few bullet points. First one, the we report is very solid organic top-line growth driven by all regions, which is always nice to see if all the regions contribute to the good results. You will see later on the details, and also with all markets. That means truck, bus, and trailer. We are still challenging. We have still some challenging market environments, especially in the U.S. In the first 2 quarters this year, which turns to be better, but I will come to that later on as well. And we also have some challenges in markets like Turkey, Australia, parts of Asia-Pacific, Middle East, Mexico, etc. But again, I will come to the details later on. The second bullet point, the Q2 sales growth reached 9.7%. It was a record quarter for us with a sales level of more than 300 million, exactly 300.3 million euros. We never did 300 million euros in 1 quarter. Organic growth of that was 7.1%, FX effects related to 1.4%, and our M&A activities in this regard is KLL for the first time in the second quarter 2017 with plus 1.2%. The adjusted EBIT margin came in within our range of 8 to 9% as targeted for the full year, but higher than expected. 8.9% we saw in Q2 and 8.8% in the first half year this year. The adjusted EBIT amounted to 26.7. Previous year was 26.3, so slightly lower last year. Coming to some other topics, our plant consolidation, which keeps us very busy this year, this is in full progress. We are according to our plan. It's running very well. We spent already 4.3 million euros in the year 2017. But as I said, we are on track and it will be done until end of this year regarding the consolidation of our factories from 7 factories down to 5. I will come to that later also a little bit more in detail when I talk about the Americas. The reported EPS, the earnings per share, came in at 26 euro cents. In 2016, it was 32, and the adjusted basic earnings per share amounted to 35 euro cents. That was in Q2 2016, 38 euro cents. Last bullet point about efficiency measures, our production consolidation in Brazil with KLL and our own factory in Jaguarina, that is done. We realize now the synergies. We do some repositioning. And, of course, we do a lot with COPCO. We reported that in the last 3 or 4 quarters that we are not really satisfied with the development of COPCO in China. COPCO, just as a reminder, is the producer of air suspensions for buses, mainly for the Chinese market. And we are working on that to restructure this company. but I also will come to that more in detail when I talk about APAC China. Yeah, this is the business summary of the second quarter 2017. I would like to go to the market update, which is page number 6. And then I start with the North American and then followed by the European market. On page number 6, you see the overview of the trailer net orders in North America. This is important to mention. This is not production, and this is not our order intake. Okay, this is the net order for trailer OEMs. What you cannot see here is production, and this you can see on our comment here. In the first half 2017, the trailer production was still down by 7%, while net orders soared by 41% year over year. June, and as you can see, that's the last line here, June trailer net orders came in at 18,900 units, rebounding from May at 12% month-over-month growth, and a 58% increase over June 2016. So that means, and if you look to the last couple of months, that goes absolutely in the right direction, better than forecasted, and we see the second half of the year, of course, then stronger as the first half. But again, I need to repeat that trailer production was down 7%. I also would like to spend a minute here on the numbers. These, when you look to the order intake the last couple of months, starting, for example, from November 2016 on, December, and then January this year, February, you see very high numbers, and now it's leveling down for the balance of the year. This is very normal. This is always a seasonal trend in the U.S., especially in the U.S. market, that the fleets place their orders with the trailer OEMs around end of the year, early the year, and for the big numbers, the big orders, and then for the rest of the year, in the following months, quarters and months, they order specific the numbers of trailers they need for this particular week or for this particular day. That means this order intake, this net order intake for trailers, is not what we see in our order books. Our visibility is only 4 to 6 weeks. That means the trailer OEMs, and by the way, that's the same for the truck OEMs, they place their orders when they start their production, when they need our systems and components. They don't place the orders with us when they get the big orders from the fleets, because, again, these are always annual orders for the whole year. So, but anyhow, it's a good overview, as you can see, and the order intake for trailers in North America is coming back and is getting better. On the last page, on the end of the presentation, I will talk about the absolute numbers. What does it mean for 2017? How some market participants and how we see it. Yeah, on the next page, page 7, you see the same overview, but this is now for Class 8 trucks, and that's the market where we are in. Most of our products, especially fifth wheels and air suspensions for trucks, that goes to the Class 8 trucks. And therefore, as you see, the net orders. Also, here you see one of our comments. The Class 8 production fell by 8% in the first half of this year. Just to remind you, trailer production one slide ago was 7%, so almost the same number. So production was also lower than last year. Order intake increased by 35% year over year. And the Class 8 net orders intake in June was 17,600 units, which is an improvement of 7% month over month and 38% higher than the admittedly very low comparables from a year ago. So also on the truck side, that goes in the right direction. The North American market for trucks and trailer is coming back. Yeah, on the next page, page 8, you see the new registrations for heavy commercial vehicles in Europe. Heavy commercial vehicles means above 16 tons. And again, this is not net orders. These are registrations. And also, this is a good development. Europe is very solid, strong. The June 2017 registration show a slight slowdown in demand, minus 1%. So for me, that's stable. May was really strong with a double-digit increase of 13.5%. And the markets like Spain, UK, and also France did very well. All three markets with double-digit numbers. And even UK is still strong. A lot of people believe due to the Brexit decision, etc., the market will slow down. Yeah, it will, but so far we don't see that, not on the truck side and not on the trailer side. It is still quite strong. Germany was a little bit lower, minus 11%, but okay, this could be a monthly effect. Overall, the European truck market, and by the way, also the trailer market is very solid, and there is nothing to complain about that. It's another good year. Yeah, that's about the markets. Let's talk about the financials. On page number 10, you see the overview of our sales development on the left-hand side and the adjusted EBIT development on the right-hand side. Let's talk about first the sales development. We, as I already said, we achieved a new record high growing quarter of 300.3 million euros. So far, our best quarter ever was Q2 2015, as you can see on the left-hand side, with 287.7 million, but we beat that now in the last quarter with more than 300 million euro. This is a growth by 9.7%, and yeah, that is really fantastic to see this sales development. Q2, following a strong Q1 with 7.6% growth, respectively 4% in Q4 2016. On the profitability side, which is on the right hand on this slide, you see our adjusted EBIT development. Q2 2017 came in with 26.7 million euros, respectively 8.9%, which is higher than the previous year with 8.9. Slightly higher with 8.7% in Q1 2017. Yeah, I come to the regions more in detail when we talk about the profitability, but for overall the company, it's trending also here in a very good direction. On the next page, on page number 11, you see the sales split in the second quarter of this year by channel, by sales channel and by region. You see our OE business grew from 202 million to 227.5 million, and also the aftermarket even grew to 72.8 million. But of course, and that's clearly what you can see here, the OE market with 12.6% growth was a very good growth development, and aftermarket was not that strong, mainly due to a weaker North American aftermarket business as expected, but also we come to that. On the right-hand side, you see the growth per region. EMEAE was almost at 160 million euros. Americas at 116. And again, you learned before, the truck and trailer production was 7, respectively 8% down. So we beat that with another growth story up to 116.8 million. APEC China, a very good development for coming from 16.9 million now to 23.9, which is mainly due to our trailer business in China and in the APEC region, but also I will elaborate on this more in detail on the following pages. Yeah, with this I would like to come to the three regions. On page number 12, I would like to start with the EMEAE. EMEAE means Europe, Middle East, Africa, and India. The headline here says solid organic growth continues, and this is really what we see. Coming from 152 in Q2 2016, now being at 159.6, which is a 5% growth, and on a currency-adjusted basis, 4.3 year-over-year. Where does this growth come from? Germany, as the biggest market, is still strong, but the markets like Italy, Spain, and as I said, also UK, have a solid growth, and we gain some market share also in these markets, and mainly the trailer market is going very well, still very well in all over Europe. Aftermarket also was very solid in the second quarter this year. We grow our aftermarket business, especially in some regions like Russia. And Russia overall is, let's say, going in the right direction. The Russian market is coming back. We see that now for almost 2-3 quarters now. And we are not absolutely not at the normal levels which we have seen before the crisis in Russia, so before 2014. But it goes in the right direction, mainly because the ruble is getting stronger now. That means the Russian customers, the fleets, they have more money to buy for new equipment, trucks and trailers and spare parts. The last bullet point is about the Turkish plant. As you know, we opened that in March this year. We are already booked, fully booked on a one-shift basis in Turkey, mainly with orders from the neighboring countries like Iran. Also, this market is coming now strongly, and we are very happy that we did this move to open the factory in Turkey to fulfill the demands of the customers, of the local customers in these areas. And so we can serve them now from the Turkey plant in Gülce, which is right between Istanbul and Ankara. And we don't need to have this capacity here in the German plants, where we are running more or less under full capacity. I would say probably in 3 to 4 months from now, we need to decide if we start with a second shift in Turkey. That's, of course, our plan. That was planned for later next year, but we might do it a little bit earlier because of the higher demand. It depends highly on the Turkish market development. The Turkish market is very much down. We believe roughly 50 to 60% compared with the 2015 and early 2016 numbers. And we see no signs of recovery for Turkey for now, but that might change. It also depends on some big customers and our agreements for 2018. But if all this will work well, okay, then we might go in a second shift operation in Turkey. But again, this is something we need to decide later on. So far, Turkey is running very well, very stable, quality is very high, and as I said, we are quite happy with this move. Yeah, coming to the profitability in the EMEA region, the adjusted EBIT came in with 17.3 million euros, which is even higher than the good result in Q2 2016. We have, once again, a double-digit adjusted EBIT margin, which is very nice. But, of course, Q2 2016 with 11.3 was extremely high and extremely good. We also have some challenge with steel price here in Europe, and the product mix was not the optimum. We have a lot of standard products, especially on the axle and suspension sides, with lower margins. But anyhow, sales-wise, as you could see, with 159 million, it was a very good quarter. Yeah, that's about Europe. Again, very solid, and we don't see any changes for the balance of the year in Europe. The market is good. Coming to Americas on page number 13, here we have a little bit different picture on the profitability side, but on the sales side, it's the same development than in Europe. In Q2 2016, we did 104.8 million, now 116.8 million, and that despite a lower truck and trailer production in North America, so we achieved a sales growth of 11.5%, which shows clearly our strategy is right. Strategy means being active in bus, truck and trailer, selling products with higher margins, selling products with features and benefits for customers, and also our idea that pays off now, content per vehicle, especially on the trailer side, also that pays off with market share gains and higher sales per unit. So overall, you can see the result also in the second quarter this year. After adjustment of some positive currency effects of 3.1 million, and the contribution from KLL, our investment we did in the company in Brazil, which we took partly over in September last year, our organic sales even increased by 5.5%. Overall, the outperformance of the market, and this is very good, and that should continue in this way. On the profitability side, the Q2 adjusted EBIT margin came in at 6.3%. Previous year was 7.6. Why is that so low? There are some one-time effects which we will explain more in detail. I do, let's say, the headline here, and Matthias will coming more into the details. But what was the biggest part of this lower EBIT? We had 4.3 million euros in restructuring costs booked in this region. Of course, it has to do with our running plant consolidation. But on top of that, again, this was a big ticket, but on top of that, our margin was burdened by increased scrap steel price, especially in North America. The steel price is on the highest level compared with the rest of the world. And this will continue for a couple of months as we can see it, and it will take some time to bring these higher steel prices to our customers. You know, we have with most of them contracts, so we can do it, and we do it. We do it since years and years, but it takes up to 6 to 9 months to pass on these price increases to our OEM customers. That's one thing. Second thing is, we have a one-time effect, especially in the first half of this year and especially in the second quarter, of higher personnel costs in the U.S. Why is it? Because of the plant consolidation, we need to ramp up production and we need to train people in the factories where we are going to produce in the future. At the same time, we still have the people on board in the factories we are going to close or be closed already. That means we have double number of people on board. We have more than 100 people now in North America on our payroll, which we probably need only half of them. But this is due to the ramp up in production, as we mentioned before, plus the plant consolidation, which creates inefficiency. It's very clear. We don't like that, that's for sure. But it is what it is. We decided to put more people in to fulfill the demand of our customers because we said when we started the plant consolidation, our customers, especially on the OEM side and the aftermarket, should not really feel that we do a plant consolidation. They need to run the business. They need our axles, suspensions, fifth wheels, landing gears, all the components, and we will deliver. And therefore, we need partly more people than normally, and that, of course, costs money. Yeah, and then last but not least, another effect is the product mix. Every time when markets are ramping up, and we know that for generations now, then it's all standard trucks, standard trailers, standard components from us, and these standard components are good for sales, but not so good for the profitability because margins are lower. You see that from year to year, every time when market goes up, this is a normal effect, but this also was not in favor for the Q2 numbers. Okay, that's about Americas. Last but not least, the APEC China region on page number 14. Yeah, here you can see both sales and adjusted EBIT goes absolutely in the right direction. We see a very nice increase in both numbers. Sales increased by 41.9% on a currency adjusted basis. So from 16.9 million now to almost 24 million in the second quarter. That was mainly driven by our trailer business. Also here our strategy pays off to try to convince the Chinese customers, Chinese fleets, but also the trailer OEMs to invest in components and systems with higher value, with low weight. That goes absolutely in the direction of this new standard in China, which was implemented last year in September, the so-called GB1589. That regulates overloading and also dimensions of trucks and trailers, and that boomed the market, and we are part of that. And especially with our products, we benefit from that very, very nicely. Australia is still below our plan. We hope it will be better in the second half of the year, but we don't really know yet. So Australia is still difficult. But China, on the trailer side, is extremely good. Corpco is still not good, but we turned the tide here. Corpco is still negative, but sooner or later, I believe at the end of the year, at the latest early next year, we'll come back to break even. But again, trailer was so strong that the sales increased by almost 42%. Yeah, together with a higher utilization of our plant in Xiamen and with products with higher margins, both come together, we increased now our EBIT from 6.5% last year now to 8.8% in the second quarter 2017, which came in absolute figures with 2.1 million. And this is, of course, as I said, COFCO is getting a little bit better now. We don't lose that money anymore. And Charmant is mainly the key driver of this very nice development. Yeah, that's about the business overview and the three regions. And with this, I would like to hand over to Matthias.
Yes, thank you, Detlef. And before I move everybody back to the group P&L, allow me to add just one element to the China region, and that is around the margin. Detlef talked about the high margin products and the success that we had in the first half. If we look at the remainder of the year, we currently foresee China to come in below group average margin. We currently calculate with a margin somewhere between 6% and 7% for the APEC China region, which we believe to be more sustainable. Now, if I take you back to the group P&L and begin with the gross profit on page 15, you see the visualization that we began with at the end of Q1 to show the margin analysis on gross profit, because we feel this is a very transparent way to discuss with you the different influencing factors, not only on gross profit, but then later on also on adjusted EBIT, at least parts of these factors. Of course, positive is the fact that we have higher sales volume and a very high demand for our products. However, at this point, if we look at the product and segment mix, this comes at the moment with a higher impact from the OE business, which shows a lower margin than the aftermarket business. Plus, buried in this product mix question, we also see a somewhat weaker aftermarket performance, in particular in some markets. Detlef touched on the U.S. I would like to add the weak aftermarket performance in Mexico, in particular, where we have a challenging market momentum at this point. The raw materials are the steel price variances that we commented on, which can take some time to pass on to customers. Restructuring for Q2, 4.5 million, in particular 4.3 million related to U.S. plant consolidation. Just to remind everybody, we are in the process of consolidating 7 plants into 5, moving things from north to south, closer to our customers. In parallel to the plant consolidation, we are working on increasing capacity. This is a demanding project, as Detlef described, but it is well on track, and we are happy to meet increasing customer demands from the uptake in the North American marketplace. On the exchange rate, Detlef commented on that in his high-level overview at the beginning of the presentation. We see some positive influence. On the operating efficiencies, you see a plus and a minus. This is not due to the fact that the company cannot make up its mind what to put, but because we have two different sides of the same topic. In China and Brazil, we certainly see positive influences from operating efficiencies, while we have some temporary inefficiencies in North America in particular due to what we described earlier. Overall, and this is important to me as the CFO of a company, we do not have a permanent structural issue when it comes to the margin, which looks a little low at 18.3%. If we exclude the one-time restructuring, that margin would have come in at 19.8%, as depicted on the slide. The factors that we describe here are temporary in nature and not permanent. You can also see that there are some cost items that are not adjusted for, and therefore they drop straight through to the bottom line, which is something that you can already see on the next slide, which is page 16. Before we move to that slide, let me just add that the steel price impact we expect to be stable or slightly lower for the remainder of the year, but we still need to bear in mind the delay that we have in passing it on to the customer. On page 16, this is basically the enlargement of what Detlef showed on a previous slide. We commented on that already. I would just like to add that in absolute terms, compared to Q2 2016, we were able to increase by another $500,000, 26.7 versus 26.3. Moving on to page 17, the reconciliation between EBIT and adjusted EBIT. Here is the usual reconciliation. Nothing unusual. You see the two items that we normally adjust for, the depreciation and amortization from PPA and the restructuring and transaction costs. Just to remind everybody one more time, the 4.8 million divide themselves into 4.3 million related to the U.S., and the rest is mainly from restructuring efforts in China. Page 18, from EBIT to net income, i.e. putting the pieces of the P&L together, you can see that the lower net income on the right of 11.8 million euro, which compares to 14.6 million a year ago, is caused both by operational aspects, which we just discussed, such as restructuring, but also by higher finance expenses. Here we had 3.9 million versus 2 million a year ago. What are the reasons for this? There are two in particular. Number one, a higher net interest expense, 3.4 million versus 2.6, plus an impact from evaluation of financial derivatives connected to the financing that we took out to prepare for M&A activities last summer. This effect could not be counterbalanced or overcompensated by a lower tax rate, which came in at 29.6%. But you see that it went down to 11.8 million. Speaking about the tax rate, we do not feel that 29.6% is the right number to calculate with for the full year. Here we currently anticipate a rate in the range between 32 and 33%. If we now take a look at the EPS, Detlef commented on this already, against an unchanged number of 45.4 million shares. Mathematics suggest that given the lower result, these numbers per share also come in lower. However, allow me to draw your attention also to the half-year values, which are not shown on this slide, which stood at 52 euro cents on the basic earnings per share versus 57 euro cents a year ago. On the adjusted EPS per share, we had an increase towards 67% per share versus 65 a year ago, given or caused rather by the absolute increase in the adjusted result. Page 20, we turn the focus a little bit more towards the balance sheet, inventories and net working capital. I'm happy to report that I kept my pledge that I gave you after the first quarter. The company executed successfully. While inventories increased compared to year end, we were able to decrease them quarter over quarter, Q2 versus Q1, by 6.8 million euro. On top of that, days of inventory went down to 51 from 57, despite our North American plant consolidation and the related pre-production needed to enable the moves and the consolidation. That is very positive. Related to that, there's a corresponding impact, if you like, on net working capital. The net working capital went down, I talk now about the ratio, to 11.9%. In absolute terms, it also decreased. This is positive. We're now even below, or rather in line with our target range, which continues to stand between 12 and 13%. On the receivables side, because that is a nice transition to the next slide, those are still high given the strong sales performance. However, we have also managed to produce a proper cash inflow from that and collected our cash successfully, and also worked with our suppliers to have a positive impact on net working capital. continuing the transparency for the moment on the monthly distribution of revenues, I would like to point you to page 21, where you can see a somewhat similar pattern in Q2 to Q1. Detlef commented on the success of the second quarter already. Important to understand the success that we had in Q2 in perspective, because we also had 3 less working days, which we discussed with you during the Q1 call. If we now also put the pieces together on the net working capital discussion and look at page 22, the free cash flow per quarter, here I kept the pledge, which is a consequence of what I just described to you. Working capital is now at a seasonally average level, which also enables positive free cash flow. We achieved 7.5 million in the second quarter. That does not only take us back into positive territory, but it is also above the Q2 number of 2016, which stood at 6.1 million. While at the half-year mark, if you add up the minus 15.6 from the first quarter and the 7.5 from the second quarter, we are still negative in terms of free cash flow. We remain confident to generate a free cash flow of around 40 million for the full year. The assumption is based on the seasonal patterns in inventory and our continued strong focus on the topic. Page 23 is the capital structure, net debt, taking into account cash and cash equivalents and other short-term investments was up. Our equity ratio at 28.5% was slightly lower than at year-end. This was mainly due on the net debt side to our working capital requirements on the one hand, but also on the due to the dividend payment on the other hand, and the latter is then certainly also an influencing factor on the equity ratio. If we look forward on this particular topic of net debt, we expect this to come down in the second half of the year in line with the reduction of working capital and incoming cash flow. And with that said, I turn it back to Detlef, who will now talk about market forecast and the company outlook.
Hi, Matthias, thanks a lot for your detailed description of our financials. I would like to do the last following two slides, starting with the market forecast 2017 and then out of that our outlook. I'm on page 25. Most of you are familiar with this format. On the first two lines, you see the global trailer forecast, especially for North America and Western and Eastern Europe. And as you can see right on the right-hand side, these are our most important markets. Approximately 20% of our sales, as you can see on the right-hand side, are related to the North American trailer market, and 40%, approximately 40%, are related to the European trailer market. So the number for this year, 2017, ACT and FTR are very close, that's not very often, with around about 300,000 trailers to be built in North America this year. That means a minus 4% compared with the numbers of 2016. Interesting enough, if you look to the numbers which we presented when we did Q1, and I just look back to this, our older presentation, at that time, that's only 3 months ago, ACT said the North American trailer market will shrink by minus 6.1%, and FTR said, again, that's only 3 months ago, minus 9%. So they're coming from minus 9 now to minus 2.8. So both ACT and FTR, and they are really in the picture, predict still a slower market, but definitely better than predicted. And you might remember when we started this year, early in December, January, everybody thought the North American trailer market will shrink by 16%. That was also, by the way, our budget that we said we believed the market will be pretty bad in 2017 on the trailer side in North America. On the European side, which is the second line, trailer production forecasted by Mr. Beecroft, Talking about last year, it was a very nice growth, up to 300,000 trailers. By the way, the same number which is predicted now for this year for North America, which was a growth of 7.8%. This year, very stable, with, again, around 300,000 trailers. One quarter ago, there was minus 2.5%. So also here, Mr. Beecroft increased his forecast for 2017 for Europe being absolutely stable. On both, for Europe, we definitely, I would confirm that. We see that also in all the discussions with our customers, with end users, that means fleets, but also with the trailer OEMs. There are no signs of weaknesses. And again, as I said earlier, Russia is coming back, which is normally an important market for Europe. So this will help. Turkey, again, question mark, very weak so far. And Iran is also coming back. The rest of Middle East, by the way, like Saudi Arabia, FAE, etc., very, very weak. I would say almost dead. Saudi Arabia is still minus 50%, so nothing's moving on there. And the rest of Middle East and Near East is also very, very quiet. But again, Europe, most important, 300,000 trailers to be built this year, very good number, no weaknesses so far. On the truck side, which is line 3 and 4, first with North American Class 8, ACT predict for this year plus 7.5% in FTR, predicting 4.2%. Also here, looking back 3 months ago, XZ minus 4.8%, and now you see plus 7.5%, and FDR said minus 6.2%, and now 4.2% positive. So also the same story then on the trailer side. They changed their view and predicting now a growth in the North American truck market up to roughly 240,000 units. This number, just to look back to the numbers of 2015, for example, where we have seen roughly 320,000 trucks, Class 8 trucks being built in North America. So with 240,000 roughly, that is 80,000 units lower. So it's still not a good market, but going in the right direction, change into positive, and so this will give, we believe, very nice or very good signals for 2018. If that will continue, which we don't know. But also here, that's only 10% of our total sales. Please have that in mind. And the truck market in Europe, which is only 4% of our total sales, also quite strong, very solid. LMC is reporting a growth of 5.5% compared with last year. And even last year was 4% growth. I'm not sure about this number, but it will definitely be not lower than last year. You might remember last time I said, we will see what will happen here in Europe. The market might shrink a little bit, but obviously it's stronger than expected from my side, and so it's good, and it goes in the right direction. So this is about the market forecast. One sentence to Brazil. This is not listed here, but here we have a very different picture. You know that we did the acquisition in September last year with KLL, which have 57% of the shares. The owner is still our managing director now in Brazil. In Brazil, we have a different development. Truck and bus is going better now. We see roughly something between 10 and 15% plus in order intake for the truck and bus OEMs. So this is good, but on a very low level, just to say that. On the trailer side, it's unfortunately nothing going on. It's very weak. The first quarter was even lower than last year, and also the following months, April, May, and June, not really good. The market is, here we can say, really dead. We're talking about 80-85% lower than the normal year. We don't know what will happen in the Brazilian trailer market. We see there might be a consolidation also on the OEM side. We will see. For us, it's just to survive, but the KLL exposure to the truck and bus market is much bigger than to the trailer market, so therefore a growth there will help us, and trailer will follow. We don't know when, probably not this year, but maybe next year, but Brazil is still an issue. Okay, coming to our forecast for the remainder of for the balance of this year, 2017, I'm on page 26 now. On the sales side, we changed it a little bit more to the positives. Now we say we're tending to the upper end of our sales range. We said 1.06 billion to 1.09 billion, and due to the good results in the first half of this year, we see now the upper end of this range. Of course, assuming stable FX rates, that's clear, and unchanged scope of consolidation. On the profitability, adjusted EBIT margin, from today's standpoint, we're tending to the midpoint of the range between 8 and 9%, and I would like to confirm that. Net working capital ratio, as Matthias already said, we are on a good way here. We are already a little bit below our corridor of 12 to 13%, and I'm quite confident that we will be in this range, and CapEx is very normal, as we do not every year somewhere around 30 million, and we would like to spend this money also this year. Yeah, with this, I'm at the end of the presentation. Thanks for listening, and I would like to hand over back to Stefan.
Yeah, so I hope you have a lot of questions, and the session is now open for question and answers. Please go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 9 followed by the star key on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press 9 followed by the star key again. Please press 9 star now to state your question. And the first question comes from Mr. Alexander Baal from M.M. Warburg.
Yes, good morning. Gentlemen, thank you for taking my questions. The first one is related to your outlook. You revised your outlook to the upper range of your guidance corridor. That implies about 4.6% growth, and given that we have seen 7.4% organic growth in H1, and you are obviously not expecting a deceleration in your customer markets, could you just elaborate a little bit on the precise assumptions you have that are reflected in your forecast, and whether you would agree with me that even the upper end of that corridor is probably rather conservative?
Yeah, I would like to try to answer your question. Yeah, of course. I would say it's a continuing story. Second quarter is almost always very strong in our business and also with SAF Holland. And then the second half of the year is mostly always weaker. Why is that? Because we have summer vacation. For example, now here in August, we close our factories here in Germany for more than 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. Why are we doing that? Because our customers are closing their factories. So therefore, there is no sales at all on the OEM side, or almost not at all, because we have no production. The same is in North America. Around Thanksgiving, there is no production. And in both regions, or let's say in all regions of the world, we have then the Christmas time. We don't know yet how long our customers will close their plants over Christmas. Is it a couple of days? Is it 1 week? Sometimes they do it to 2 to 3 weeks, depending on their workload, on their investments. Do they need to install some new equipment, etc.? So we have no overview so far how long our customers will close their factories in this Thanksgiving and Christmas time. So second half, in a nutshell, is always weaker than the first half, but our visibility is, as I repeated, only roughly six weeks. These are the main reasons, and so therefore we are very confident with the upper range. Okay, everything above, we need to see. It is still too early to talk about it in early August.
Okay, thank you. Then a second question on your view on China. Obviously, you have benefited from that regulatory change very much in the first two quarters. Now, when you look, for example, at WABCO, WABCO is expecting a significant decline in the second half of the year. I know that WABCO is probably more into trucks than you are, so maybe you could just comment a little bit on your further expectations regarding the Chinese development for trailers in the second half of the year.
Yeah, for sure. Wabco is right, absolutely. The truck market will not go on like this, but this was probably a record last two or three quarters in China, a record ever. It was really a boom. The same on the trailer side. We see tripled numbers in the trailer production coming from a normal year. For us, this is not really so important. Why is that? Because our market share so far in China, both on trucks and trailers, is very small. On truck is almost nothing. Okay, that will change with coming orders for trucks air suspensions. You might remember that we got a big one, which will come in early 2019. Then we do first truck suspensions, air suspensions. But so far, there's almost nothing. On the same on the fifth wheel side, we are not a player in China in this market, almost not a player. But trailer, there we are, but still very low market share. Due to the strategy, and I mentioned that before, that we are going for in production for products which has a higher value, which are much more expensive than the standard trailer axle suspensions in China. We believe in air suspensions. We believe in disc brakes. That's what we do here in Europe very successfully and more successfully in North America. And we try to do the same copy-paste approach in China. That works. As you can see, second quarter was outstanding good. And that was more or less only with products with high costs for the customers, but also higher value. And so although the trailer market might come down, for the rest of the year in 2018, we still will grow according to the strategy. And this is something to come. There are rumors that in autumn this year, September, October, so quite soon, there will be another regulation in China which regulates the equipment, especially on the trailer side, for trailers with hazard goods. That means oil, benzene, chemicals, etc. There are big fleets in China running this, but of course they transport hazard goods. If the brakes are not right, if the suspensions are not right, you have accidents and then people can be seriously injured or die. And therefore, if this new regulation will come in, that's what we hear is, then air suspension and disc brakes for trailer is mandatory. We have no other market in the world where this is the case. If this will happen, then it's good for us because, as I said, this is our playground. Here we are one of the best or probably the best in the world, and we are investing in that. We are building production there, especially for this product. We can use products from US, our CBX25, for example, very good product in North America, but also our module air suspension here from Europe. We can use both in the Chinese market, and we are investing in that. So, therefore, if the trailer market will go down in China, maybe, I believe, or we believe, we still will grow.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, welcome.
The next question comes from Mr. Christian Ludwig from Bankhaus Lampe.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Also, a couple of questions from my side. The first one, have to get back on your guidance. I mean, I've heard you, Mr. Borchardt, all the negatives that will hit the second half. We had all these negatives, Thanksgiving and Christmas and vacations last year as well, and you've managed more than 500 million in the second half of last year. Now, we have a U.S. market, which is clearly picking up, so there's no reason to believe that you're going to be weaker in the second half this year than you were last year. Europe is still stable, and China, you just said, is also not going to go down. So what am I missing here? That it's only the upper end of the guidance, because obviously I would expect that you would do much better than the 509 million you did in last year's second half.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Ludwig, sorry to also to repeat myself. It is always the same story. You know that we are always try to be on the safe side, especially the last quarter in a year. Always have some surprises. That's the normal way it is. And we would like to be here, let's say, on the safe side. So we have another almost six months to go. And we are conservative, as you know, and we feel comfortable with what I said. To increase the guidance now is too early. Give us another couple of months, at the latest when we do the Q3 results, then we know exactly what will happen this year, or almost exactly. But for now, there are always surprises in the last quarter. And for now, there's no reason to increase it.
Okay, fair enough. Then on your U.S. restructuring, you mentioned in the call earlier that there are roughly 50 people too much on your payroll as of today. When do you think you will be able to normalize your personnel situation?
Okay, I have two answers. Hopefully never, because maybe we need the people also on the long run, because we have so many orders that we need additional employees. But if it's not the case, then of course we will get rid of the people. All these people are leased or temporarily people, by the way. So it's very easy to get rid of them. I would say at the end of the plan consolidation, as you know, this is planned for end of this year, then we get rid of these people probably earlier. That's, of course, our task. But as I said, if the order intake will continue in this way, then we might need these people also for next year, and then we would be happy to have these people on board, because it is not so easy to get good people in parts of North America. Unemployment rate in some areas is very low. For example, in Warrington, we looked for almost for 3-4 months to get CNC workers. We needed 25 additional CNC workers for our plant in Warrington due to the plant consolidation, bringing equipment from the factory in Muskegon and from in Holland to Warrington. And it took us really a long time to find these people. So it's challenging. So therefore, if we don't need the people, we get rid of them within a couple of days. If we need them, I'm happy. If we increase further our capacity, especially in Warrington, but also in the factory in Wiley and Dumas, then the people will stay aboard. In Dumas, for example, we're working now 7 days a week. So we need good people. Yeah.
And if I may just round that off, Mr. Ludwig, from a financial perspective, we stick to the original business case that we shared with you on U.S. plant consolidation. We have booked two-thirds of the expected one-off restructuring charges of $10 million up to now. There is a little bit more to come until year-end, but the timeline is just fine. As a result of that, we still expect a mid-single-digit million US dollar effect on the cost run rate in North America. So if you combine that with a positive market momentum, hopefully into 2018, that would give us a positive margin development on the P&L in North America.
Okay. Then two more quick questions. First of all, you had given us your or announced the second order for disk brake systems earlier this year. Has there been any follow-up orders in the U.S.? And the second question on Corpco, going through my notes, this order for the truck suspension systems I had penciled in for 2018. If I understood you correctly, Mr. Borkert, it's now 2019. Is this a delay or did I misunderstand this earlier?
No. Your notes are right. The ramp up is in the last quarter of 18, okay? But the numbers which are important for us, that means higher production numbers, that's in 19, okay? So, but it will start in 18. So you are right. US Express, yeah, that was of course a big order. We get now continuously orders on disc brakes. The share of disc brakes is growing. But there was no really big one, you know, with 1,800 units in one shot to report on. And, you know, by the way, we're a little bit hesitant to publish every big orders because some of our competitors might get too nervous, okay? So, therefore, if there are really some good things to report on, then, of course, we do it. But we do not report on everything. But anyhow, as I said before, our strategy, content per vehicle, that pays off, especially when we get orders with disc brakes, because then we deliver excellent suspension with a wheel end, with suspensions, with a slider, with the axle, etc. So full blown, and that is part of our nice sales increase, as you have seen in the second quarter.
Then could you share with us how high the share of disc brakes is currently in your U.S. order book?
It was always below 5%. We are now at 10% plus.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Mr. Philip Laurent from Berenberg.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Philip Laurent from Berenberg. A couple of questions from my side. I would like to bounce back first on the U.S. and the growth perspective that you have here, especially in terms of content. So looking at your figures, especially in Q2 and in Q1 this year, it looks like the strategy that you have to sell more disc brakes and also increasing the full the content or going more into full systems for the trailers works particularly well. My question here is, how long do you think that this growth trend, or let's say the outperformance trend versus market volumes, can hold on? That's the first question.
Yeah, bonjour, Monsieur Laurent. That's a good question. How long will that go on? Basically, it can go on for a long, long time. It depends a little bit on the development by our competitors. As you know, we only have a very few. Just to name, for example, Hendrickson as the biggest market player in the North American trailer market. They also sell disc brakes, of course. They also sell fully dressed axles and the full package. But I believe, or we believe, that our products, weight-wise, are at least the same or sometimes a little bit better. The experience we have with disc brakes is definitely the longest in the market. Nobody else in the global trailer market has this experience on disc brakes than we have. So all this, together with our service, what we do in North America, and together with our pricing, we believe we still will gain market share. And you might remember that our target is still 1/3, let's say 30%, up to 1/3 of the North American trailer market. And we are not there yet. So how long it will take, we will see. We believe we are around 20% now, maybe 20% plus. So there is still room to grow. Does it take 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? We have a plan, okay, but I will not let you know yet. But within the next 2-3 years, I believe we are there. And then, of course, we will still outperform the market.
Okay, thank you for that. Then I've got one question regarding the EMEA India segment in Q2. You mentioned in your report that you had actually some adverse product mix effects. And I was just wondering, when we speak about this adverse product mix effect, do you think actually more about a mix effect that was, let's say, evolving positively for the new business and probably a bit less positively for the service business? So is that actually an activity mix that you mean? Or is it really like in the trailer segment of the EMEA region that you had demand for lower margin products?
Yes, bonjour, Philippe. It's Matthias. Maybe I can take that. I think let's clarify this. We have shown in Europe we're very happy with the model that we have in terms of how we go to market on the aftermarket side. As it said on page 12, we have a solid aftermarket performance in Europe. So from that angle, it works. It is not from the aftermarket in this segment or in this region, rather. What we have here is a difference in margins of the products actually sold to customers. And given that there is a higher share of OE, you can then do the calculation that within the range of OE products that we sold, the somewhat lower margin products or the relatively lower margin products sort of had the majority and then less statistically to this effect.
Okay, I understand. And could you precise which kind of products these are actually on the trailer side? Or give a rough indication?
No, allow me to refrain from doing that, Philippe.
Okay, thank you. And then I've got one question actually regarding your, let's say, very strong performance in free cash flow generation, because I would say that's the highlight actually of this quarter. The fact that you managed to keep your inventories at quite a low level despite the fact that you have this plant consolidation running in the US and pre-producing. So I would like to ask you, especially to you, Mr. Heiden, because you're coming from SAP, so from the software side of things, With all that planned consolidation happening in the US, and I would say as well with all your work on optimizing the global structures of SAF Holland, including the logistic structures for yourself, would you say that there is a significant room still for improving the inventory management, perhaps by using, I would say, standardized or group-wide warehouse management system software, these kind of solutions? Is that something that you're working on? Because when you speak about your digitalization strategy, you speak first about digitalizing your product offering, so putting more sensors on your products and getting data out of that. But I would like to highlight as well the opportunity to digitalize your own company structure and your own organization to get more data out of that, and by data analysis, probably also making your business more efficient.
Yeah, and that's a very good question, and I'm actually very grateful for it, because for once somebody looks on the inside of the company rather than external sales, because this is very close to my heart. Let me start by at the very high level and share with you that this element that you're touching on certainly is part of the smart steel digitization strategy that we have given ourselves, number one. But number two, let me also highlight that something that you take into the digital world, a process that you automate through a superior system, does not become better if the process underneath it is broken to begin with. So you need a world-class standard process to take it into the digital world. That's the prerequisite. Having said that, I think it is fair to say that this company has very good processes to begin with, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to create such improvements reflected in the number. So we have processes and people on top of the subject matter itself. However, as always in business life, there is room for improvement. There is a big project underway that is global, where we look at inventory management that goes beyond absolute numbers and does a deep dive into processes and concrete situations at subsidiary level. If you combine that with our efforts to give ourselves a more digital face, if you like, to further automate things, I think it is fair to say that there still is room for improvement and efficiency gains for the company. Allow me to add, though, without wanting to sound too conservative, these things do not fall from the sky. They do take a moment or two to implement, because what we will do first is we will create the software infrastructure to then put on top, whether you call that a more superior warehouse management system or a better process, it boils down to the same thing at the very end of the day. But the answer to your question is yes. I will need to look at in due course how that could play into the financials of the company, but it's too early to say.
Okay, thank you very much for that detailed answer. And perhaps just as a follow-up on your networking capital management, I noticed as well that it seems like you've been increasing for the past two quarters your payment terms with suppliers. So did you have specific discussions with these guys, or is it more like, let's say, a mix of different products and different suppliers you have to do with, which offers you the opportunity to benefit from better payables?
No, I think it's a mixed bag of things that you do in the normal course of working capital management. Needless to say that we treat all of our suppliers with a lot of respect and fairly. However, it does make a difference, as you know, if you do a payment run only once a week rather than daily, and if you carefully examine the due date structure of your payments. That is something that we usually do and that we have improved. We are also working on certain elements, just to give you the other side of the spectrum, where we use early payment discounts to achieve a positive impact on the bottom line by paying early, because we are cash long. So it is really not that we went out and specifically negotiated longer payment terms, but we simply try to make a much more conscious effort and have a strong focus on this topic than maybe sometimes in previous quarters.
Okay, thank you very much for that question. That would be from my side.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The next question comes from Mr. Henning Cosman from HSBC.
Hi, yes, thank you. Good morning. Just one clarification, please, on the market share gains in North America. I just want to double check. When you say you go from 20% to 30% market share over a time frame of 2 to 3 years, I suppose that implies growth rates of 15 to 20% per year. I just wanted to double check that you're happy with that.
Basically, yes, but take into consideration, this is important. When we talk about market share, it's always a question, do you gain share in standard products? Okay, that means for a normal standard trailer in US, where you do a normal axle, which is called a brake beam, okay, which is a $700 item, or do you gain market share as we always, not always, since 1.5 years, you know, there with content per vehicle, so that we gain market share with trailers, with products, with added value, that means with some specific items like fully dressed axles, disc brakes, etc. So we are not going to gain our market shares with standard products. That's not the target. And the majority of the North American trailers still are standard products. Okay. So to gain 10 market share points in this market area really is not our target. Our target is to gain, like as I said, for example, in China, special vehicles, tankers, silos, refrigerators, etc. So trailers with higher value, there we would like to gain market share. So it's not just take 300,000 trailers and say one third that is our, and so we do trailers and suspension, axles and suspensions for 100,000 trailers. This is not our target. Okay, so it's a little bit more specific.
So we're also talking about a market share of a given, say, revenue pool rather than unit penetration rate. Is that right?
that's a very difficult question. In the past, we always talked about units, okay? I'm not sure if this is the right approach for the future, because I just described the reason, okay? To be number one in a market just based on volumes, for example, in China, doesn't really count, okay? So what we will do later this year, we will do a market share survey, okay, not by us, but some external consultants. So we need to find out what are the actual market shares in the specific regions, in the specific products we do, so that we have some official numbers available, and then we can talk about it. But of course, this is an important question. But again, market share for us is not a key driver. Okay, market share is nice to have, but not really something, for example, with one of our KPIs.
Sure. I suppose I'm just obsessing about that because obviously it makes a huge difference. Yeah, if you go in from 20 to 30% in unit terms and your content per vehicle is even a lot above that, then we're probably talking about, say it's twice, then it's probably 40% revenue growth per year, yeah, when it's 20% growth in units.
You're absolutely right. Therefore, I said it's very difficult to just to do a big sum here. So yeah, one third or let's say 30% of the trailer market in US, and that's our market share. That's not our target. Okay, we would like
to do it with
specialized vehicles, with higher content per vehicle, with products which give features and benefits for the end users. So it's a little bit different approach.
Understood. Thank you. And the second question, maybe on the potential acquisitions. I'm not sure if I've missed that before, but I saw in your release also that the financial expenses are relatively high because you've provisioned funds to do these acquisitions or corporations. If there's anything at all you can update us on, or I think in the past you mentioned a different allocation maybe of these funds to repay some of the financial debt earlier than initially planned. If you could talk about that at all.
Yeah, M&A. It took 30 minutes though before the question came up now, so I'm a little bit surprised. Anyhow, of course, we reported that for the last couple of quarters. We have a long list and a short list, okay, regarding M&A targets, joint venture targets, etc., according to our strategy 2020. And you might remember that we plan for roughly 250 million euros additional growth until the end of 2020 due to M&A activities. So our shortlist, we are working on that. Number one of our shortlist was Haldex. Okay, this is almost a year ago now. So this is off. Now we are working on the other targets, but it's too early, far too early to say anything about that. But we're working on that. Regarding how to use the money, of course, first target is to spend it for M&A activities. If not, okay, Matthias, then it's your money, okay, sir.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this is already a part of the answer to the question. Of course, your question goes in the direction of whether we will repay the April 2018 bond maturity or not. Let me start the answer by saying you can expect to see a relief on the interest expense because obviously that bond comes with an unusually high coupon. So whatever we do next year, whether we refinance this or not, we will see a relief on the interest expense side. The decision whether we refinance or repay has not yet been made, but there is one simple reason for it, and that is the idea of the company to potentially create a win-win situation for shareholders and bondholders alike, meaning if we are in a situation where we need to refinance and keep the cash because we find an opportunity worthwhile that is in line with the 2020 strategy and our growth ambitions, then it might make sense to make it part of an acquisition financing. If not, we will repay the bond at that point in time. It is too early yet to make a definitive comment on that.
That's very clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, there are no further questions. If you would like to ask any questions, please press 9 and star on your telephone keypad. Okay, the next question is from Mr. Tim Schultz from Equinet Bank.
Yes, thank you and good morning. Two questions left from my side. One is just to get a feeling, what's the average wage you're paying for a temporary worker in the U.S.? And secondly, you mentioned that Haldex is off, well, as far as I know, the acquisition by Knorr-Bremse is still not closed. Is this something you're still hoping for is maybe said too much, but is this something you're still watching and you think there might be even a slight chance that you that it could not work with Knorr-Bremse?
Yeah, let me answer your second question first about Haldex. As we always say, we don't comment that at all. We are looking at that from the sideline, as we always say, and so we will see. It's not in our hand anymore. It's other players like Knorr and of course Haldex and the shareholders of Haldex, and then we will see what will happen. It will take obviously some more time before anything will be come to a final decision here. Of course, just to add this, we demonstrated our interest exactly 1 year ago, okay, where we put 442 million on the table to acquire the company. Therefore, of course, the company is a good one, is a very good target, and that's what we tried to reach. That didn't came through last time. So the other things are not in our hand anymore. So for now. Okay. And the other question regarding the average salary of the temporaries in temps in US, I really don't know. Everything I say now is wrong. So we need to come back to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, there are no further questions.
So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for attending today's conference call and all of your interesting questions. I think we see each other again at early November to the Q3 conference call session then. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.